fun.
T.
T.
F is for famous.
Fun. Fumble. M is for Montreal.
Sécurité, les vibrations de la communauté. Sécurité, FM 90.3.
Welcome to John Abbott on the Air. I'm your host, Emily Daou, and today, Grace McDougall-Vick will be joining us in a conversation about climate change. Hi, Grace. Welcome to CKUT 90.3, John Abbott on the Air. I'm really happy for you to join us today.
Yeah, happy to be here. My name is Grace McDougall-Vick, and I'm currently studying at McGill in environmental biology. Think that climate change is like a huge issue facing especially like our generation. I do my part to get people to care.
Now, picking your school program, was it influenced by the climate crisis that's going on right now?
Yeah, I think like most of my life decisions are influenced by the climate crisis. Like since high school, I've just been like really aware about it and kind of like so confused at the absurdity of like governments to just not like care or like not seem like it's like a pressing issue. So I think like, yeah, a lot of my decisions were based on that. Like in CGEP, I studied environmental science and that really like solidified like my choice to study environmental science further.
So the first moment was in high school when you first became serious about the climate crisis.
Yeah, I would say, yeah.
Now, what was the first element that like kind of woke you up and was like, oh, this is happening right now?
I can't trace it back to like a point, but like just feel like especially like people our age, like we've like grown up with this like anxiety. Like you have to be like aware of it. Like there's no like point that we can trace back to being like, oh, well, you know, like not knowing that like climate change is a huge issue.
Exactly. Cause it's like happening right in front of our eyes. Like there's no way that we can ignore it.
Yeah. Like were you ever not aware of the fact that like this is a huge issue? These like huge climate reports like have been coming out since the 90s. Like it's not a secret, you know? So I think like I've always felt that pressure.
Would you say that you experienced a sense of eco-anxiety where it's like you were doing like a mundane task, like brushing your teeth and you were like, oh crap, like I shouldn't be doing this and like tracing back and everything. Like, can you give us your experiences about eco-anxiety?
Yeah, definitely. Like I said, like I think I've just like always felt that pressure. I don't know how much I feel like on a personal level. Like I definitely did when I was younger and didn't so much understand like the structure of like, I don't know, like climate change and like how it's not a personal issue really. Like I guess that's when I felt more anxiety like at a personal level to do things like, you know, like be vegetarian or like push my family to like compost and recycle. But then like once I started learning more about it, about like the climate crisis and understanding that like it's not like an individual's responsibility like in the least, like I think it became more like anxiety of just like helplessness of feeling like no one cared.
Yeah, no, I definitely feel that where you're just, come on corporations, like what are you doing? Get taxed for all your oil that you're using. So what was the first thing you've done as a climate activist?
Well, I think a lot of like what I would call like my activism is related to like my like studying and like my school, you know, like I just like love to learn about like everything. Well, I think a lot of like what I would call like my activism is related to like my like studying and like my school, you know, like I just like love to learn about like everything.
Was there like a piece of science that you like learned and you're like, wow, like from like you're doing the program where you're like, this is crazy, like mind-blowing stuff?
Yeah, I think it was honestly like I took a class in CGEP that was, I'm gonna forget what it's called now, I think it was in environmental biology, but the professor was so great at just like bringing up like example after example of how like climate change is how we as humans are impacting like our the earth. And it was just like every week was like something new, you know. Like I think what's so crazy is just like the whole like climate change is literally related to like everything.
I know, like the intersectionality within climate change is like crazy, like how it affects everyone.
Yes, and obviously like some populations more than others, like
yeah, for sure. Like let's address it, we're white people living in the suburbs. So we have privilege when it comes to that. So we have to look at the intersectionality of people of color, of the indigenous community, women and everything. So I hear a lot of people recognize that there's climate change and it's happening now. And they kind of hit a wall where they're like, what the heck do I do now? Like, I know that this issue is happening. And so for those people who started becoming aware of the climate crisis, what's something you would suggest they start doing to like kind of ease their eco-anxiety, get involved with the movement and just put themselves out there? What would you say to them?
Yeah, well, I think it's really like human nature to just like hit a wall and like not be able to like comprehend like how crazy the situation we're in like is right now. Like we've seen it before, like in like the nuclear age, like people would just do all these things like the duck and cover and pretend like that was gonna help them if like an atomic bomb went off, you know. Like it's crazy, like this is like what we're in right now. It's like oil companies like on Twitter saying like how prevent climate change like at a personal level, and them just like thinking that that's like gonna be fine as like a band-aid, you know. So like I totally understand that, but like I would say like for me, one way that I used to like address my climate anxiety was like in like actions, you know, like studying the environment and like trying to join groups like Extinction Rebellion.
Oh yes, can you talk a little bit about Extinction Rebellion? Like what do you guys do?
Yeah, sure. So I started getting involved like before the pandemic, and the pandemic kind of, and we were trying to start a group at McGill, like a chapter at McGill, and that kind of like put a stop to our plans, but we'll see what happens. Yeah, sure. So I started getting involved like before the pandemic, and the pandemic kind of, and we were trying to start a group at McGill.
Because you guys were planning on going to a store, right? And so what you guys do is you glue your hand to the wall.
Well, that's like one of the demonstrations that they do, is like known for nonviolent but like disruptive demonstrations, you know. Like so they're also the group that climbed the Jacques Cartier bridge. Like I believe there were like three of them or so.
Yeah, I remember hearing about that. And I think there's two guys in the States that do disruptive things also with Toyota.
Yeah, so it's really like a global movement. I think it started in London. In London, they actually did like a major demonstration. I'm gonna forget the year now. I think maybe in 2018 or so. And it like honestly like shut down the city. Like they were blocking bridges, and law enforcement was like really overwhelmed with the amount of arrests that they had to make. So that was kind of like a huge wake up call
for everyone, because it was getting noticed and everything, making a ruckus.
So mainly like Extinction Rebellion philosophy is that they're not proposing ways to stop climate change. They just want government to tell the truth and to act now. Like they're saying like it's way too late.
Yeah, exactly, because we can't continue as like business as usual, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Now what piece of advice would you give other climate activists? What do you think are like the do's and don'ts, the golden rule of being a climate activist?
What I would say is I think we already kind of touched on this, but like climate change is not an individual problem, and you shouldn't feel like the need to take it on by yourself, because like it's really a systemic issue, and governments and corporations need to foot the bill. And especially like wealthy countries like Canada, you know, like we need to set the precedent, because obviously, like, the people that are the most affected by climate change are not, they're not the ones that contribute to it, you know? Like, the reality is that, like, wealthy nations are contributing to climate change, and like we said, marginalized people are suffering. So I think what I would say is become like a part of a movement, because that's what's going to actually change things, or like a climate policy, like that will have an impact. Yeah. What I would say is, I think we already kind of touched on this, but like climate change is not an individual problem, and you shouldn't feel like the need to take it on by yourself, because like it's really a systemic issue, and governments and corporations need to foot the bill, and especially like wealthy countries like Canada, you know, like we need to set the precedent, because obviously the people that are the most affected by climate change are not going, like, they're not the ones that contribute to it, you know? Like, the reality is that, like, wealthy nations are contributing to climate change, and, like we said, marginalized people are suffering. So become, like, a part of a movement, because that's what's going to actually change things. Or, like, supporting a climate policy, like that will have an impact. Yeah.
The individual, just like the plastic straw movement, where everyone was like, don't use plastic straws, but that's just switches the narrative onto the individual when it should be onto the corporation.
Mm-hmm. But not to feel like a responsibility on an individual level, like, sure, like little things are great, and it's great when you like push a broader community to join these movements. Like, you like going vegan might not help, but maybe like telling your school to like offer more like less meat, you know, like, or like more plant-based options, like that gives more of an impact than like individual choices.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it switches the narrative way too much, where people just get too overwhelmed.
Yeah. And like greenwashing, like, I mean, you know, like our generation, like we've been told about climate change like forever, right? So like we know, you know? So now greenwashing is becoming like a major issue.
Everywhere. Yeah, even with Amazon, like they're saying that they're becoming green, but then you just like look at the intersectionality of like the workers and all like the fast transporting that they do. It's like crazy CO2 amounts. So it's like, how can a company like this be green, you know?
Yeah, and like, they're not even, I mean, they're discouraging their workers from unionizing. Like, they are not an ethical company. And we really need to look at the intersectionality of like marginalized people, because like people that aren't getting their fair share, or people that are like living next to these, you know, like large polluters, like they don't have the opportunities that like you and I do as like white suburban kids to spend time on these issues. Like, they're like living there, they're trying hard to like get by, you know?
Yeah, exactly. So do you have like stories relating to your climate activism that like good or positives that you've experienced?
Yeah. Well, I could say like, you know, there was that big climate march in Montreal 2019. In the fall of 2019. And that was kind of cool to like see everyone like come out. But I also have to say that like, I know a lot of people were there like for the clout, like taking like performative activism and like taking pictures with their signs and posting them on Instagram. I know for a fact that these people like voted for the Liberal government. Like, you know, you can't do both. Like, you really can't have it both ways. Like, this is a government that literally was like promising climate solutions, promising reconciliation with Indigenous people, and literally like bought pipelines and hasn't provided basic human rights, you know, to Indigenous populations. We could go on and on. Like, so I guess it's not really a positive story, but like, it was cool to see how many people cared to an extent. But I think what was also like another like thing that was super upsetting at that march was like, honestly, like, I cried seeing, like, these little kids, like, with their parents at the climate march, and just, like, knowing that these, like, they're gonna have, like, a lesser quality of life. Like, the reality is that, like, it is so late. Like, it is so beyond time to, like, do something real about climate change. And, like, obviously there's still hope, like, there is, and, like, we can, like, mitigate the effects, but, like, oh my god, like, we've fucked it up so bad.
Yeah, I think people are not ready. Do you think people are not ready to realize how big the climate crisis is right now? Do you think it's going to be a shock? Because people are saying 2050, but personally, I really think it's going to come earlier.
Yeah, well, like, we're seeing the signs, like, now, like, and maybe, like, people in power aren't, because they're privileged and they can, like, afford to live in better places. But, like, I mean, like, we saw, like, the wildfires in Australia, the smog in California, like, it's happening. Like, but also, like, the science, like, proves the fact that, like, these, like, extreme weather events are linked to climate change.
Yeah, exactly. Like, there's no, like, anecdote experience. It's all based in facts, you know?
Yeah. And I don't know, I'm assuming, like, we're at a point where, like, people believe in climate change. Like, obviously things have regressed a little in the States, but, like, I mean, here, like, you can't say that the Liberal government, like, a climate denier, yet they, I don't know, have this sense that, like, it can wait, like, the economy is more important. But I don't know, I don't think we're gonna have an economy when, like, you know, like, shit hits the fan. Like, it's not gonna matter, Trudeau.
I know, exactly. Like, he wants to continue the Keystone XL pipeline even after the Biden administration recognized environmental impacts it could have. He just keeps on pushing it. And I heard in Alberta that they invested, like, $1.5 billion into that pipeline.
Like, I don't want to, like, shit on, like, Alberta, because obviously, like, people are relying on these jobs, and, like, we really need, like, that's another point of Extinction Rebellion, is, like, a just transition. Like, we cannot leave behind these, like, low-income workers that are relying on these industries. But the reality is that, like, there is so much money to be made in a green transition.
In doing the transition, exactly. And that's been, like, a big topic of conversation.
Yeah, and that's also our only option. Like, we can't rely on fossil fuels any longer.
Exactly, like, we have to provide these workers with education so they can learn how to find the green sources.
And we can't, like, pretend like our system is perfect the way it is now. Like, you know, like, there are a lot of issues. So there's all the more reason to look towards, like, a change.
Yeah, no, I'm really glad that we acknowledge that, because that's a big part of the movement of how are we going to do the just transition.
Yeah, exactly. Like, the idea is that no one gets left behind.
Exactly. I'm really happy that we really touched on the intersectionality within climate change. Thank you so much, Grace.
Thank you.
I'm glad. Everyone needs to be having these conversations now.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
There you have it, folks. In this interview, Grace and I talked about the importance of getting involved in the climate change movement. Thank you again, Grace Madugovic, for joining me in this conversation. For CKUT 90.3, John Abbott on the air, this is Emily Daou signing out.
Hello, my name is Andrew Diaz. Today, I'm going to tell a real story about a haunted hospital. So, here it goes. It was night, and the sound was coming from everywhere. To understand or to feel the sound, first you have to visualize where I used to work. I used to work in an abandoned hospital as a bartender security guard. It was my first day working in that hospital on the night shift. Actually, it doesn't look like a hospital from outside. It looks like an old mansion. It is on the top of a hill in Montreal, and you hardly see anyone passing by. And inside, in the hospital, it looked very scary. Everything was broken and empty, and the lights were having trouble staying awake. And the most awkward part is, it used to be a hospital for crippled children. And the crippled children's posters were everywhere. They look scary at night. Like when you're doing your rounds in a dark room and you hear a noise and you turn on your flashlight and suddenly you see a disabled kid laughing face. It will definitely scare the shit out of you. So when I arrived at that night, the security guard working the earlier shift showed me the hallways and gave me the flashlights and the keys. Then he left. Then the real things started to show up. After an hour, I started to hear the noise. First, I tried to ignore it, but I kept hearing it echoing through the halls. I started to get a little bit uncomfortable. It was only one sound and it was coming from everywhere. A hushed machine sound. And the sound delay time was pretty late. Sometimes it was turning on and sometimes it was turning off. And the sound was not too loud, but you can hear it turning on and off. It felt like someone was in the building. Operating a machine. I didn't have the courage to find out or go look around for whatever or whoever was making that noise at that moment. And then I was sitting in my chair watching the cameras. I heard a sound of wind coming from the ventilator. The hum was low, which is kind of creepy. It was middle of the night, and I was getting annoyed by the sound coming from the ventilator. And so I went outside to light up a cigarette, to ease my mind. And I was telling myself, you're the man, there's nothing to worry about. But I was counting the hours until I was going to finish my shift. Then suddenly, I heard a loud noise like something fell down. And the sound went echoing through the mountains into the trees. I almost choked my cigarette and the sound took soul out of me. I immediately went out inside, took my 12-inch flashlight and started to look something like a baseball bat to protect myself. And then I found an old snow shovel. Finally, I gathered my courage and my balls together and I went outside with my 12-inch flashlight and the snow shovel. One step, two step, three step. I was inching closer to the sound. I went to the garbage area and even there, there was still a sound coming from that area. Like something scratching. It's annoying and scary. I tried to turn on my flashlight and I saw two glowing eyes. It was a very long night for me, but still, at some point, working in that abandoned hospital, some sounds, I got used to it. Or, I found out where it was coming from. But, there was one particular sound that I never did figure out where it was coming from. The sound was a simple water drop. I was sitting at my front desk, watching the cameras. I heard a sound of a water drop. It was just a water drop. a simple water drop. But it was still loud, coming through the hallways, echoing between the old walls. I checked every room in that entire floor, along with the old staff lockers, washrooms, every single room with my steel flashlights and that shovel. But I couldn't find out the sound. Where was the water dropping from? The place was just like a movie. Night at the museum, where everything was alive at night, except in that movie. You can see it and hear it. But in reality, I could hear the noise, but I never could see where it was coming from. And the place is still a mystery to me, that never dies, or it was never alive.
Hello, my name is Shane Osborne, and today I'll be talking about an interesting story that happened to my parents. This story takes place during the 1998 ice storm. On a normal day in 1998, my parents both woke up to what appeared as an ice storm. This storm started just like any other storm, however, this one left a bigger dent than most. After 3 consecutive days of constant havoc due to the storm, the majority of the province lost power. About a week after the storm, my parents were forced to leave their current home, seek shelter somewhere else that could support their basic needs. The initial freezing rain lasted about 80 hours, however, it caused the whole city to be powerless for several weeks. Luckily, their parents had a cottage house that they could stay at that offered food and shelter to keep them safe and warm. On the way up, my parents were worried about the drive due to the whole road being covered in black ice. However, after a long drive up, they finally arrived at the cottage. Due to the lack of power and works being cancelled, their main source of entertainment was board games and social interactions. This storm even caused one of my father's friends to bring his barbecue in his house to use as a source of heat. This was fairly dangerous at the time because he was heating up rocks for his fuel. However, due to the conditions, he didn't have much of a choice. Therefore, with this all being said, this was a tragic event that had the whole province on alert. Thank you. That was Shane Osborne and John Abbott on the air on CKUT 90.3 FM, and that was the 1998 ice storm story.
That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening to CKUT 90.3 FM. This is John Abbott on the air. I'm Evie Stockvis. See you next time.
You're listening to CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal.
The Prison Radio Show is a twice-monthly news show on CKUT. The show seeks to confront the invisibility of prisons and prisoner struggles by focusing on the roots of incarceration, policing, and criminalization, and by challenging ideas about what prisons are and who ends up inside. We are dedicated to programming that is directly collaborative with people who are currently incarcerated. With that in mind, we would like to let you know that we have a phone line for prisoners and their outside supporters. In fact, we have 2 phone lines. You can call us Collect from Bordeaux Prison and Riviere de Prairie Prison by calling 514-876-3748. We also have a number for non-collect calls. That number is 438-337-8423. Feel free to call that number and leave a message for us with news to share on the show or an audio message for your loved ones inside.
MuTech Montreal, the most important festival for digital creativity and electronic music in North America, returns for its 23rd edition at Corte de Spectacle. From Tuesday, August 23rd to Sunday, August 28th, vibe to the rhythm of more than 100 local and international artists such as Caterina Barbieri, Cora Novoa, Koreatown Acid, Luke Slater, Max Cooper, and Nicola Cruz. MuTech also has a program dedicated to professionals with its MuTech Forum and Market, which consists of 4 days of exchanges and events centered around digital creation. The complete program and tickets are now available at a preferential rate at montreal.mutech.org. This is a CKUT co-presentation.
Ça fait la 30e fois, non, la cour mourir.